The Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board has released a thorough report on how federal agencies, mainly the National Security Agency, track foreigners' internet communications. The board found the surveillance under Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to be legal. Earlier, we interviewed Sharon Bradford Franklin. She had this to say about the NSA's so-called PRISM program.
PRISM is one aspect of the surveillance program that is operated under Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA. PRISM refers to the collection of what's called the downstream process, and it also includes what's called the upstream process. Both aspects of the program involve the collection of information from targets who must be foreigners located overseas. Under this program, the government cannot target any U.S. persons, so no U.S. citizens, no legal residents, and no one else present in the United States. However, they can collect communications where someone in the United States is on the other end of a call with a legitimate target.
That's Sharon Bradford Franklin. She is the executive director of the Civil Liberties and Oversight Board. We now turn to former White House privacy chief Peter Swire. He's read the report and joins us with his perspective on its finding. Peter, good morning.
Morning to you.
And before we get to the findings here, I want to ask you this. In your privacy days at the White House and so forth, did you ever expect that people like you would have to deal with something so extensive like this NSA program?
Well, it was the Clinton years when I was the White House privacy lead, and I think a lot of these programs weren't in place before 9/11. I did work on President Obama's review group that was one of the five people last year, and we studied many of the same topics that this Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board report addressed, and so we saw the really large scale that this has grown to.
And so the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board has seemed like they've done a creditable job of threading a very fine needle among all of this because of the scooping that happens under this PRISM program. But what's your assessment of how they've managed to handle this one?
I think the PCLOB, it's not a lovely sounding acronym, but people call it the PCLOB. The PCLOB, I think, has done a very professional report, and I think their findings are very consistent with our review group report that I did with Richard Clark and Cass Sunstein and all earlier this year. I think that the basic story is that when you target foreigners and you have a reason to think that their communications are related to foreign intelligence, that you often get useful stuff. That's one of the findings. But then the question is, if you target that person, who else are you scooping up, especially what are the U.S. communications are you scooping up? And the PCLOB report's wrestling with what the House of Representatives wrestled with in its most recent vote in this matter. And I think you may know that the House voted to cut back on what they call the backdoor searches, where they're targeting a foreigner, they end up scooping up a bunch of U.S. data, and then they can search the U.S. data today. And I think that's where there's a big issue, and the House voted to stop doing that. So that's a big political issue that's there right now. The PCLOB report supports, I think, the idea that there's an awful lot of overcollection for people who aren't the targets.
I think they call it incidental data collection on
That's
the
PCLOB. Correct.
And so, but how is it possible to really sort or sift all of that out when the internet is really a worldwide kind of cloud of communications where the servers, even from among two foreigners, could even come through the United States, where they could send it through the United States on purpose?
Well, one thing is when you do scoop it up and you find out it's a U.S. person information that wasn't part of your target, then you don't keep it. You don't treat it as, hey, we found this, now we get to use it for everything. Those are the backdoor searches, and I think that's what the House vote was really getting at. So one idea is when you look at it, you realize it's not what you were looking for. You don't keep it around for 5 years and use it as a searchable database.
Now, the board, the PCLOB, as we will unfortunately call it, did
right.
have some policy recommendations, but a lot of people felt that maybe the policy recommendations weren't strong enough or weren't decisive enough. What's your take on were they or were they not? And second of all, is it really the board's responsibility to come up with strong policy recommendations?
Well, one thing they can do that the rest of the world can't do is get the classified briefings, find out what's really going on, dig under the rocks. And when they did that, they found both that it's useful and that there was what looks like a lot of incidental collection. So I think they provide us a factual basis for saying this stuff, this kind of targeting of known suspects is really pretty darn useful. And that's different from what they found out for the telephone metadata program for 215, where they did not find it useful. So they can look at the classified briefings, and I think that's a real reason to read their report carefully. In terms of the recommendations, on 215, they were very strong. They said it was not legal and not constitutional. On this one, they said, you know what? This is what the Congress passed. This looks legal, but if it gets too broad, then it really calls into question constitutional Fourth Amendment things. I think that's a pretty accurate judgment. It's pretty close to what I think is accurate. They weren't the civil liberties ACLU outcome on everything, but the fact is they were an ACLU position on one and not on this one. I think that shows they're doing their job and really looking at the facts.
I mean, it shows they're also independent, I guess, too.
They are independent. There's five of them. They come from different political parties. The main recommendations here were unanimous 5-0, and I think that's worth noticing.
What else did you see in the report, you know, from your perspective?
Well, I think, you know, I think one thing is that it ties into the Washington Post story last weekend, which found that there's about 10 collections on U.S. persons that are not targets for anybody who actually was the target. So this incidental collection is a big quantity thing. We should control it. We should really find ways to address that. That's what the House vote was saying, and I hope that Congress can get to that. I think another thing that they saw is that the NSA controls are relatively clear and in place. By contrast, the FBI controls are much less developed, the internal controls. And so this can get put into sort of general-purpose criminal databases and be used for all sorts of other stuff. That means they're getting stuff on U.S. persons without a warrant under this Section 02 lower standard. Then it goes into a database, then the FBI can do things with it. So I think the FBI and its procedures deserve a lot more attention. There should be oversight on that, and I think there might be less rigor in how the FBI is using this data than we really should have.
It sounds almost as if they're in the FBI and the NSA and other law enforcement agencies are in a chicken and egg situation. You can't just go looking for things that could maybe in a big data environment develop into, say, probable cause, but yet you have to find out what's going to go on possibly ahead of time. So they're kind of in a conundrum.
Well, they are, except that, but I think the story here is especially about U.S. persons and searching the content of our emails and phone calls. For U.S. person data, they shouldn't use this backdoor way to build up these databases. When they have the ordinary build up the data and then you find stuff about U.S. persons, they should follow the normal procedures. They shouldn't use 702 as a backdoor way to do it. That's what the PCLOB said, is what the House vote said. It's very much similar to what we said in our report, the review group report. So we've had examination of the facts by two independent bodies. They've come up with the same concern about incidental collection, and I think Congress can and should address it.
So really, I guess, too, the other lesson here is that there is a lot of information and improper information in terms of whether it should be gathered in metadata, and not even the content of things, but just the fact of who spoke to whom, when, and for how long, this kind of thing is itself a danger.
Well, this report, the 702 report, is about content. This is the full content of emails, and there's the over-collection and the incidental collection. The metadata 215.
That was the 215.
That's the previous report. That's where the administration has shifted away from the previous idea of holding it for 5 years by the government. And I think we made a lot of progress there to say we shouldn't have secret government databases on the metadata, because that's a concern. This has to do with the content of communications at volume. And the safeguards that the PCLOB talks about, I think, are in the right direction.
Now, of course, this has sparked a lot of concern among ordinary Americans. It's become the topic of articles and shows and so forth, because people can relate to their phone calls and their emails. A lot of your work was on HIPAA and health information regulations
right.
Earlier on. And do you recall the same kind of concern the average person might have had about healthcare information that they have today about internet and phone communications?
Well, sure. Before we had HIPAA, which went into effect around the turn of the 2000s, we did not have any national privacy laws when it came to healthcare. And so your psychiatric records, the other records of your cancer tests, at that point there were no legal protections around that. And as we shifted to electronic records, I think there was overwhelming support for the idea that there should be common sense safeguards. And HIPAA, I think, has done that. You know, people make fun of the forms that they fill out when you go to the doctor's office. But we have a basic idea that we should protect your health records. And we also have that in banking. You get your banking privacy notice in Gramm-Leach-Bleierley, which we worked on then. So we have some of these common sense things in place. I think that that for the NSA and the FBI, these are things where it's hard for us to tell what's going on because a lot of it's done in a classified environment. And that's where the PCLOB report can really get a sense of factually what's going on. Their ability to do this kind of investigation that didn't exist before they got stood up, that ability to dig into the classified facts, I think, is a really important thing and deserves to be supported.
And what's your assessment of the role of the carriers and the phone companies and the Comcast and all the people that handle this information, keep the metadata for billing purposes or whatever they keep it for? Mm-hmm. Are they being handled in the right way as this whole debate goes on?
Well, they've gone through a real change in the last couple of years, and especially since the Snowden stuff. I think that the lawyers for those companies, telecom and email companies, are now saying, show us the right legal process, and of course we're going to do what is legally required. But they've been burned, and they're not going to have the government walk in and say, hand us a database, and be so willing anymore to hand over the database. So I think they're much more careful, they're much more lawyered up when it comes to how they face these things. And that's going to make the government prove its case, and it's going to mean consumers are going to have the lawyers for the phone companies scrutinizing these things a little bit more before the data just goes over to a government database.
And I'll ask you the question I've asked a few guests about Edward Snowden. If you would meet him, would you strangle him or would you put a laurel wreath on his head?
I've been right in the middle of that for a long time. I have best friends on both sides, and I think he's created a service because we've had the debate, but he broke federal laws on a massive scale, and I think that's just a very hard place, and that's civil disobedience, and I think seeing him as facing consequences for deciding to put himself above the law, maybe for good moral reasons, I think seeing it as a civil disobedience is the right way to look at it.
All right, so looking ahead to getting back to the PCLOB report and the programs NSA operates, what's your take on how it'll look, say, a year from now?
Well, Congress really has decisions. You know, we have the House of Representatives with a decisive vote to stop the backdoor searches. The PCLOB report, I think, points in the same direction. Our review group report pointed in the same direction and maybe helped get this debate going on this part of 702. And so I hope as the Senate looks at the Defense Appropriations Bill, where the rider is, I think as the Senate looks at the broader USA, the new Protections Act, Congress really has a chance to sort of put in place some safeguards, and I think we're on a way towards consensus that the backdoor searches shouldn't be done.
Peter Swire is senior fellow at the Future of Privacy Forum and the Center for American Progress, and a professor at Georgia Tech University. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you.